us on this Monday afternoon, President's Day. And, yeah, here's the thing. I'll just be honest with you. It's a company holiday. And if I actually came in and did a live show today, I would have to somehow figure out a way to use this day off at the end of the year. And frankly, I don't really know how to celebrate President's Day. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do on this day. If you have an idea, go ahead and text me. Even though I'm not working, I'll check the text messages at 98973. And if you can let me know the best, most effective way to celebrate President's Day, to celebrate the greatness of Joe Biden and Donald Trump and all of the others before them. I can't. Rutherford B. Hayes. I would like to know how to celebrate Rutherford B. Hayes today. So we have this President's Day edition, some of our favorite segments from the last few weeks, and then we'll see you later in the week with a live edition. But thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon and enjoy this President's Day edition of the Dory Monson Show. Well, we've seen it on so many fronts, the drug addiction, the legalized drugs, the legalized crime, and Seattle City Council wants to make it even worse. And what's going to happen is crime will deepen. And we're seeing that Seattle is one of the worst cities, and it spreads. I mean, it's metastasizing. Stabbings all around the region yesterday, you know, throughout King and Snohomish counties, and it's spreading throughout the entire region. I want to share with you an email I got from a listener named Christine. She said, I was assaulted and seriously injured by a meth addict during a break-in at my condo building in Greenwood. I've tried and tried, but failed to get a response from Mayor Durkin or any of the Seattle City Council members regarding the incredible and absolutely unforgivable amount of crime and drug addiction in this city as they continue to just allow the criminals to take over and flourish. And Christine joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Christine, thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you so much, Dory.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out because I do think it's important to get these stories out there. And, you know, to whatever extent you are comfortable, share with me what happened to you.
Sure. So this event happened 10 days before Christmas last year. And what happened was my partner and I were woken up at about 12:45 a.m., by one of my dogs, actually, who was going crazy, which is pretty out of character. And so we bolted out of bed, and outside my dining room window, you can see the back door of my building. And my partner, Todd, looked out and saw just tons of stuff just being stockpiled out there. So it was pretty obvious that we were being robbed at the time. So he went to investigate, and he actually found someone in the building and chased them out of the building and ran for chased this person for several blocks until a car pulled around and picked that person up and drove away. So meanwhile, I unfortunately thought that that was it and there was no one else in the building. So I started walking around to assess the damage. You know, our mail was all over the place. Packages had been stolen. There was things strewn about the building from our storage lockers.
Okay.
Each unit has a storage locker on each floor.
Yep.
So as I went, and it's three-story building, so as I was walking around, I went up to the third floor to see what was going on there. And when I opened the door to the large room that houses all the storage lockers, there was someone in there still. Mm.
What goes through your mind? Because you weren't expecting somebody on the other side of that door. So what goes through your mind right then?
Well, I've thought about this quite a bit, actually, because a lot of people thought, oh, you must have been so scared. And I think initially I was, but then I was just overcome by anger, actually, because this was actually a third break-in just within a six-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And I am regularly picking up needles in our carports. There's prostitution going on in our parking spots. And since I'm working from home quite a bit now during the pandemic, I mean, these things are going on all day and all night. It's not even just the middle of the night. So when I saw someone in there, my first reaction was just such anger. So I asked this woman to leave, and she started yelling at me. And what made me even more upset was that she kept saying over and over how there was nothing I could do about it, that even if she were to be arrested, which she felt like she wouldn't be, that she would just be let go, and it was no problem, that she could do whatever she wanted.
No, that's absolutely
true. And I
really
do believe that's true.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Yeah, the word is out. The cops' hands are tied, not by their choice. You know, their police chief this weekend said they're going to start getting a little tougher now. But Seattle City Attorney, they're just going to keep kicking people loose for property crimes. So you said you were assaulted and seriously injured. What happened?
Right. So what happened was we kind of got in an argument, and I kind of chased her down the stairs. So down three flights of stairs, and she went out the back of the building. And like I said earlier, there was all of the belongings to different residents here out the back door. So when we got to the bottom, there must have been the suitcase. It was outside the door. It was like this very hard plastic roller type suitcase. And as she was about to leave the building, she grabbed it, picked it up, and threw it at me, and it hit me right between the eyes. So I had to get 13 stitches. There's a huge laceration from above my eyebrow down over the bridge of my nose and down to the corner of my eye. I'm actually pretty lucky, because if it was even a little bit further over, it could have literally taken my eye completely out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I got to ask, Christine, and I am not about blaming the victim, but you said you've heard a lot of comments from a lot of people. Have you rethought the wisdom of chasing somebody who is likely a drug addict over property?
You know, I wrestle with that, because I just feel like I can't be scared. I can't live in fear of someone continually breaking in and violating my home, and just let it go and just let them do it. And because I don't care about any of the things that were stolen. I mean, nothing of mine was even stolen, and I don't really care about that. It's just the principle of it. I feel very strongly that I cannot allow people to just come in here with no consequences and like no reaction from the residents of the city or the residents of this building. So maybe that was just stupid of me, because obviously I got hurt.
I ask that as a devil's advocate, and not because I also think we have to start standing up, because you know, the police cannot get to all of these crimes because there are so many of them. Let me go to the other side of the spectrum. Have you thought about getting a gun?
You know, I never really had before until now, because, I mean, like I said, this building has been broken into multiple times, and I have called the police, and they won't come. They won't come unless you're hurt. They did come that night after I called them, because I was injured, and I've called them about other things going on in the neighborhood. We have several homes that are being squatted in by other addicts, and you see right out your window, you see crime happening. And I've called about these particular things that I've witnessed, and nobody comes unless you're in physical danger. And by then it's too late. So I feel like almost you have no choice but to protect yourself. And I feel like the residents of the city are so passive as well. And I just won't let that happen. Yeah. And, you know, I've lived in like most major U.S. cities, grew up in the New York area. I lived in Chicago for a long time before moving here. And these are known violent cities, but I have never felt unsafe until I lived here. And it's because there's no police presence around.
That is a strong and then finally, I only have a few seconds left, but the other thing that struck me, you contacted the mayor, you contacted the Seattle City Council, including your representative. They don't even respond to you. Is that right?
That's right. I did not hear anything back from any of the council members. And I actually emailed them a couple of times. After about 3 weeks, I did hear back from the mayor's office, but it was almost, it would have been less insulting if I didn't hear back at all, because from the response, it was so obvious that she hadn't even read the letter that I sent or looked at any of the photos of my injuries that I sent, because it was basically just blaming everything on COVID, which we all know is that that's not true, because wow. There's been, I think there's 360 unauthorized homeless camps counted before COVID even hit. So it's not like these crazy things have not been going on, and they right. just started happening this past
no,
year.
That's insane to blame that. Well, I'm sorry this happened. I'm glad you reached out to me. Because, as I said, I think we need to get these stories out there, because people have to understand that it's going to take all of us with our votes and with our action to try to get some sanity back to the city that I love. And when you say you grew up in New York, you lived a long time in Chicago, but you've never felt scared until you came to Seattle, that is a pretty shocking thing to hear.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I think this is a beautiful place, and it's sad to see how it's being destroyed.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Christine, all my best to you, and
thank you so much.
Keep me posted on any developments on the story, okay?
I sure will. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Christine,
bye-bye.
Seattle resident who was badly injured by a meth addict, robbing her condo building. This is Seattle in 2021 here. Your thoughts, text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we do have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Take a few of our favorite segments from the last couple of weeks and put those together for you in a very special best of edition of the Dory Monson Show. We thought that, you know, to do anything else would be disrespectful, because, you know, I mean, you got Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, George W., Bill Clinton. He was a little loose with the ethics, but, you know, I still have respect for the office. And so I'm just going to sit around this afternoon and I'm going to reflect on how great the office is, how much I appreciate all the people who have served. And I thought the best way to show my appreciation would be by taking the day off. I don't know how that works either. But I hope you enjoy some of our favorite segments from the last couple of weeks as we do this best of edition of the Dory Monson Show. A couple of days ago, the Baseball Hall of Fame announced that, I don't know if it was the first time ever, but at least for the first time in a long, long, long time, nobody would be inducted this year. Nobody met the 75% vote threshold. Now, somebody deserved to, and that's Curt Schilling, who was one of the, and I'm not making this a sports topic, believe me. We got other radio stations for that. But Curt Schilling was one of the greatest postseason pitchers in baseball history. In the playoffs, in the World Series, he had some of the best numbers in the history of the game. And he was one of the best pitchers of his time. And that's usually the standard for getting into the Hall of Fame, if you are dominant during your period. Curt Schilling did not get in. And the reason he didn't get in is because Kurt Schilling is conservative. So he fell about 16 votes shy of the 75%. He got 71%, roughly. And this points out so many things. You know, first of all, baseball writers, and I don't know any of the beat writers for the Mariners now, so this is not a comment about current Mariner beat writers. But back when I was covering sports, back in the 80s and into the 90s, baseball beat writers were one of the most unusual groups of people because they were all as arrogant as any profession I've ever known. And they think their stuff doesn't stink. And they're very insular because they, you know, not anymore, not during COVID, but baseball beat writers travel with the team and they're all about, you know, getting ins with the players and the managers, and they're with each other. And it's, man, it is such an echo chamber. So anyway, Kurt Schilling and in general, they hate conservative people. Baseball beat writers, sports writers in general. They are unbelievably liberal. And the reason is, especially today, that you have to be. If you don't parrot the social justice stuff, the, you know, the names on the helmets and, you know, the poet before the Super Bowl and all of that stuff, then nobody will talk to you. So you have to be incredibly left-wing so that you can, you know, stay in. Not all athletes are far left, because let's face it, they're rich. But a lot of them are. So in general, they tend to be very left-wing as a profession. So Kurt Schilling doesn't get in, even though he deserves to, because of his politics after his playing days. And he talked to OutKick about this. It's a very interesting interview because he now says next year's his last year to be on the ballot. And he said, don't even put me on the ballot because obviously these guys aren't going to vote for me, not because of my baseball bona fides, but because of my politics.
I knew we had kind of reached the nexus. My wife and I were talking the night before, and I just wanted it over. I'm at a point now where I don't want to go through this again. I made peace with this a long time ago in understanding who was the who wielded the gavel, who was judging. I mean, you're talking about a group of people that are 85% white and 90% male. And they're lecturing me on diversity and racism and all of the things that go with that, including, I mean, the ones that know me, the writers that know me know the things they're writing aren't true, yet they still write them. And I realized with, you know, my wife is currently in the midst of chemotherapy and battling breast cancer, and it's been a challenging couple months, and I dreaded the day.
And I will tell you that I have had things written about me that were 100% untrue because they didn't like by people in that industry, because they didn't like my social views, my political persuasion, all of that. And for Kurt Schilling, he supported Donald Trump, and he thinks that was the death blow for him to get into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, we had people in our lives. There's a reporter, a guy who works in the media in Philadelphia, who, when I was in Philly and young, I was a friend of, a good friend with. He was in our home. He was a friend of my family's. He knows us all. He knows my kids. And he made a move this week to get me removed from the Phillies Wall of Fame. I mean, the hatred runs deep for President Trump and for conservatives. And he's a coward, and he's a liar. And he's also a guy who was not averse to making comments to me when I was younger that today would get him fired. And he said and did things that we know aren't true. And when I saw the impact it was having on my family, I just realized I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be a part of this. And I'm kind of kicking myself a little bit for not thinking of it sooner. I mean, I've now removed the writers from any possibility of passing judgment on me in a meaningful way for the rest of my life. And it actually feels up like uplifting.
He's talking to Clay Travis at OutKick.com, and he pointed out that it is, and it's getting worse and worse with every passing day, that about the worst crime you can commit in America today is to not be a liberal.
This is a group of people who voted voted for and have a pedophile, a man in the Writers' Wing of the Hall of Fame who molested his niece. And after that went public and everything happened, they voiced their support of him as a writer and said, well, you know, he's in there because of his writing, not because of, quote, the other stuff. And that's these same people, again, that voiced their displeasure at my, you know, again, the things that they claim are just not true. You know, I didn't voice my support for violence at the Capitol. I voiced my support for protest, which this country is built on, protesting things you disagree with. But these same people voted for a man who beat his wife. They voted for a man who beat an elderly man. They voted for two guys who cheated, and when caught, they lied to ruin the lives of other people. So, you know, all of this stuff is a maelstrom of things that add up to these people being absolutely in no position to judge anybody.
Yeah, but they are, and a guy who is worthy of the greatest honor going into the Hall of Fame is denied because of his politics. Welcome to America, 2021. This is going to continue, and if you dare to go against the popular orthodoxy, you know, at least, you know, on a national scale, it's still about 50-50. I tell you what, here in the Puget Sound area, it's, you know, 70-30, 80-20. And, you know, they've come after me hard. But I'm wrapped in the warm embrace of you. So I'm hanging in there. And I appreciate it very much. And we have lots more to come as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Costco parking lot in Linwood, and it just seems so impossible that things like this can happen in this day and age where people seem to be better informed. But some scammers have been hitting up people from the Costco as they're going to their car. Joanna Small is the Public Affairs and Communications Manager with the Linwood Police Department, and she joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Joanna, thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Dory.
So tell me the MO of these scammers. Are they targeting mainly older women? Because that's what I saw in a news story.
Well, I think that their targets are predominantly women, and yes, probably some older, more vulnerable women, and also people maybe who struggle a little bit with English. And you got to think of the old Nigerian email scam, you know, if you remember that from like the late 90s, early 2000s. And they even
I remember it from our state unemployment office last year, but yeah.
Oh, that as well.
I know what you're talking about.
Because of that in our own police department. So, yeah, there's always, you know, it's just the same old thing, just this one is happening face to face. And we don't know what it is about these people that is so convincing, if they're just preying on people who, like you said, maybe are vulnerable or people who have a soft spot and want to help somebody who they determine to believe or they believe to be, you know, as somebody who's in trouble or just needs some help. And what we've seen at least twice in our Costco parking lot is an individual who claims to be from West Africa approaches this woman and says that he's lost and that he has a large inheritance. You've heard this before from a family member. Mm-hmm. I think in the report that I was just reading, he said $200,000, and he's looking to make some donations to charity, but he's lost and he needs help. And then he He hands his cell phone to the victim and says, here, talk to my attorney. And this quote-unquote attorney says, yeah, can you just help him out? He just got in the country. He's confused. Could you take him to another location? And that location in the two cases we've had has been another local fast food restaurant parking lot. And the victim, okay, for one reason or the other, complies and drives this individual over to that parking lot where a second person appears on scene. And somehow the two of them together talk about wanting to donate money to charity, and one shows the other allegedly a large sum of cash and then asks the victim, would you make a donation too? And there will be a return on your investment. And the victim has gone to the ATM and withdrawn $10,000 in both of these cases, just that we know about, given that money to the individuals. And in the most recent case we had, which was just last week, they said, we want to know we can trust you. So we want you to get in your car and drive to the other side of the parking lot and then come back. And she got in her car and drove to the other side of the parking lot. And when she came back, they were gone. And she's never going to see her $10,000 again.
How in the world? I didn't even think you could get $10,000. I thought the limit at an ATM was $3,000. They were able to get $10,000 out of an ATM?
Maybe they went to multiple ATMs, but yeah, they were able to get out that large sum of money.
And so the victims, and it seems so ludicrous that someone would do this, but I also know the message that you as a police department want to get out is, instead of focusing on just how you know, seemingly silly or stupid it is to fall prey to something like this, you just want to get the word out there and encourage people to talk to their elderly relatives and make sure that they have a sense of what's going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't want you exactly to spend your time thinking, how could somebody be so foolish? Instead, we want you to say, is there somebody in my life who is vulnerable? Is there somebody in my life who maybe needs to hear this from me? Just remember, don't give money to any strangers. You know, they always have a sob story to tell. That's how they prey on people. And obviously this works, because if it didn't work, they wouldn't still be doing it. And so somebody somewhere falls for this kind of thing. And what people need to know ahead of time, before they become a quote unquote victim of this, because technically these are really hard to investigate as crimes because the people weren't forced to do anything. That's what makes this so challenging. So before they become a victim, let's just try to prevent them from ever getting into this conversation to begin with.
But if you caught the people just because the victims willingly gave over the money, it would be tough to prosecute, because I would think, aren't there some bunco laws? I mean, if you swindle somebody out of $10,000, there's no applicable law that could go after the swindlers?
Well, there's some theft through fraud that I talked about with our detective unit, our criminal investigations division, that typically handles these kinds of cases. It's just really tough to prove in this case, because everything happened verbally. There was nothing signed. These were all just conversations that happened in parking lots. And then that's if we even were to be able to track down these individuals. So you're right. There's definitely the whole swindling aspect of things. These people, there's false pretenses here that they're using to obtain this money. But we just are getting into some really, really hairy situation where it's difficult to prove that.
Wow. Okay, so two people so far, both were first approached. I know Costco has nothing to do with this, but they were first approached in the Linwood Costco parking lot, and two people have given them $10,000 each. Is that right?
That's right. And we believe them to be the same people. The physical descriptions of the two individuals are similar enough to draw that conclusion.
Okay. And I mean, what is the description, if we're keeping people? Because you said they say they're from West Africa. Are these black guys who are the perpetrators in this?
They're both African-American men. The first one, who says he is from West Africa and puts his attorney on the phone, actually has an accent. The second person was described as being shorter, more heavyset, looking like a quote-unquote transient individual, is how he was described as the victim. And those two people, at least in the second case we're dealing with, the one that occurred last week, claim not to know each other. So clearly the second individual is in on the scam, because they start discussing donating money to charity. But he just approaches them in the fast food parking lot as if coming out of the blue.
Crazy. All right. Well, I'm glad you came on and alerted my listeners to what's going on out there. Thank you for your time this afternoon, Joanna.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day.
All right. Joanna Small, she's with the Lynnwood Police Department. And I will tell you, just being completely honest here, there's one other aspect that makes a scam like this possible. And that's why I asked about race. There are people who are so afraid that they are going to be perceived as racist. You know, if you ignore the original entreaty by the scammer in the parking lot, or if you don't help them out, there are some people who are so afraid of being portrayed as racist or that they're going to be considered racist that they will do things that they know aren't smart because they are just so desperate to make sure that nobody ever calls them the R word. And we do have lots more to come here in the Dory Monson Show.